Hello, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth. This is a very special episode. For the first time ever, it is just me, Ian Wenick, in case you've never listened to me before. No, I'm not Alex Seeger dropping a British accent. And then I am joined by CityWire RA senior reporter Sam Bajarski. Sam, how are you doing today?
Doing well. It's good to be back. I don't think I've been on since maybe early summer.
I feel like, you know, as a recurring character on this show, we need to get catchphrases. You know, something like a Steve Urkel, did I do that? Or a Hank Hill, that boy ain't right. You know, something similar to that. Do you have a catchphrase?
I don't know. For me, you got to get back to me on that.
Well, you don't have a catchphrase, but you do have an excellent scoop that dropped on Thursday. They were recording this. So if we're talking sitcoms, LPL Financial is probably one of our most frequent guest stars. And you had a great story come out this week on some new strategy that LPL is using to keep advisors on the platform. So with that softball teed up, happy to take a swing away and tell us what's the new story here.
Yeah. So we have received some detail from LPL about some of the incentives they're offering to advisors to join its corporate RIA platform. They're offering, you know, for the most part, incentives in the form of retention loans to go onto corporate, and they're making these offers to, you know, to some of their hybrid advisors in their network.
So obviously, you know, retention loans are very much a thing when it comes to advisor recruiting. I mean, we've seen this deployed to get advisors out of the wirehouses to join hybrid RIAs. I mean, LPL uses these to pull in external advisors. So I'm curious, why would LPL use retention loans on advisors that are already on the platform? So I guess, what's the incentive structure here? Why is LPL doing this?
There's plenty of incentives, you know, reasons why LPL would want more advisors on its corporate platform. I mean, just higher fees compared to its hybrid arrangement for one, and, you know, perhaps stickier assets on there is another one. And typically, also their hybrid models, there's a wrap fee in there. Not so on the corporate model. Charge for specific transactions as opposed to a wrap fee program.
Interesting. So what does the fee structure look like when you're on the corporate RIA? And I guess what role would that play in terms of LPL wanting to keep a tighter grip on these assets?
There's AUM-based fees on the corporate platform, you know, as we see in many other platforms. A lot of that goes back to the advisor, and then LPL keeps a certain percentage of it for, you know, administrative purposes. I think the fee on its main corporate platform is around 2.5%. That's the maximum fee there.
Yeah, I mean, you put that in context. I mean, the typical RIA, we feel like they charge about 1%, about 100 basis points, and that steps down over time. And LPL keeps a chunk of that asset under management fee, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously, from an LPL perspective, like, I'd obviously see why they would take this kind of angle, because obviously you retain a higher portion of the advisor's fee. The fee is higher, so you're getting more on both a percentage basis and a raw dollar basis. So from an LPL perspective, we can get into the corporate history of this in a little bit, because you and I have both done a lot of reporting on that. But if I'm an advisor, why am I taking this deal?
There's plenty of reasons on the advisor side why they would take it. I mean, the leading one just being the independent space is growing, but at the same time, the costs of running an RIA are also starting to pile up. And for, you know, like perhaps if you're a smaller advisor in a smaller shop, costs for things like compliance and like building your tech stack, evaluating like tech options, like those costs are all going up. So it's like the ability to outsource a lot of those things to a large company like LPL that has like a lot of capabilities.
So if I'm thinking about this from a game theory perspective, let's say I'm an average advisor, let's call myself Hank Hill. You know, going back to our joke from earlier, you know, if advisor Hank Hill chooses to take this deal, it seems like the trade-off is, okay, I might be giving LPL a decent chunk of the financial cut of my end clients, but my overall carrying cost for running the business is net lower, and you get these kinds of upfront incentive payments. So it seems like from that perspective, it might net out to be a financial gain for the advisor as well.
It could absolutely be a net win. And, you know, I mean, one thing it could also do that you might have been getting at is, you know, it could free up more of their time to go out and find clients. There's plenty of good reasons why they would do it.
So you spoke to LPL a little bit about this. So can you kind of give me some context about what they said about why they've been moving through this program? And I guess what effect for LPL has this had in terms of advisor flows and asset flows?
First off, like, this is nothing new at LPL. I mean, they've been, you know, for a few years, they've been kind of offering advisors, you know, opportunities to go onto their corporate platform. This push, this incentive is really nothing new, you know, but they see a lot of the dynamics in the space that I just talked about. And, you know, it's a good time for them, it seems like, to make some of these offers. And as far as what they're seeing, we've learned that they're seeing a record, well, I shouldn't say a record, but they're seeing more inflows than outflows onto their corporate RIA, at least as of last year. And that's the first time this has happened in their corporate history, where they're seeing inflows exceed outflows for their corporate RIA.
That's kind of fascinating when you think about how much of LPL's growth has been through the OSJ channel. And so for listeners who haven't heard this podcast before, so just a little quick explainer on what an OSJ is. Those are Offices of Supervisory Jurisdiction. And so those are companies that are structured as independent RIAs. They have their own RIA entity that they report assets on to the Securities and Exchange Commission. And then they conduct their brokerage business and some custodial business with an underlying broker-dealer. If you're affiliated with LPL, you do your brokerage business with LPL. And these enterprises have, I mean, they've just ballooned up in value. I mean, think about how many deals we've written about. I mean, the private advisor groups of the world, the Stratoses of the world, the wealth enhancement group.
They're out there recruiting plenty. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of fascinating that, you know, I'm trying to put this in some context. I feel like what we're seeing now with LPL trying to incent these advisors to move on to the corporate RIA, it seems like another element of them trying to take a level of control. And so this is my part where I go on a little bit of a rant here, and then you will hopefully respond. And I just look at how, so last year for our listeners, LPL, they tried to amend the terms of the master service agreements that are their underlying contracts with these OSJs. And what LPL tried to do was they really wanted to put restrictions on these OSJs buying up other LPL affiliates and then taking on outside investment. So in other words, LPL wanted to kind of give themselves a right of first refusal if these OSJs were going to take on outside capital. And frankly, I mean, from an LPL perspective, I totally understand that, which is, if you're an LPL, why would you want to fund an affiliate's recruiting for all those recruiting efforts to result in assets coming out that won't go to your platform and will ultimately enrich a financial sponsor that isn't you? So that totally made sense, though. I guess on the other side, like, a lot of the OSJs did find this unpalatable, and we saw several large OSJs, such as Merit Financial Advisors, they chose to disaffiliate as a result from this. So given all that, I mean, how do we kind of put this move in the context of that control trend? And then also, how is this kind of dynamic, this tension between the OSJs and the LPL kind of corporate mothership, how has that played out during another favorite topic of our podcast, which is the Commonwealth acquisition?
So yeah, like you said, these OSJs that have been set up by broker-dealers industry-wide, they've taken on a life of their own. And I think from LPL's perspective, what we've been talking about with the incentive to go corporate, it's almost like a security blanket for them. These OSJs, you know, they could take out an outside capital partner. Their advisors could be recruited by someone else, perhaps. So there's a risk. There's some level of risk that they could leave LPL in the future.
And it's worth noting that when LPL revealed the Commonwealth acquisition that we broke shortly thereafter, that LPL banned LPL's OSJs from accepting Commonwealth advisors onto their platform. The pitch of Commonwealth advisors is, you stay with us, you join the corporate RIA.
Yeah, they told OSJs to basically stay away.
And so this is my chance to get a little bit philosophical. And I think that this kind of push for LPL to take kind of greater control over the destinies of its advisors, I mean, this is a trend that we're seeing playing out not just in the IBD space, but we've seen this kind of in the RIA space as well, this desire to centralize, keep everything on one platform. I think a good example would be, let's take Focus Financial Partners, which has been using these hub firms and these management buyout to try to consolidate everything onto one simple centralized reporting platform as possible. And that makes sense because you can get better pricing from vendors with economies of scale. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to have a simplified investment proposition with everybody on the same ADV. Compliance is easier. Yeah. And so I get that from like a business operator's perspective, this element of control makes a ton of sense. The not concern that I have, because you know I'm not an advisor at the end of the day, but I do think there's interesting kind of dramatic tension between this push for control, centralization, shared resources. I wonder if there's a risk where that's kind of at odds with what kind of drives people to form REAs in the first place, which is the desire to be independent, to not have to use one firm's centralized list of model portfolios, to use the tech providers you want. So I'm curious, you know, from the recruiters that you talk to, from the advisors that you talk to on a day-to-day basis, I mean, do they talk about this? I mean, how have the people that you talk to on the ground on a daily basis feel about this push, not just at LPL, but in the RE community at large, this push towards centralization?
It really depends on the individuals in question. I mean, some advisors like deeply want to be entrepreneurs. They want to do everything on their own, build out their own tech stack, set up their own compliance. And for them, like independence is absolutely the right way to do it. But for others, you know, perhaps like even folks who have been in the industry for a long time and are looking to take some things off their plate, going to LPL is the answer.
So then lastly, just kind of coming downhill here, how do other broker-dealers like the Ceteras of the world, the advisor groups of the world, how have they kind of approached this? And have you seen those types of BDs take a similar approach to managing their advisor population?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of those firms, I'm a place like Osaic. I mean, they've tried to set up their own RAA-only channel. Those efforts have been ongoing. So they're same move there. And, you know, similar dynamics at Cetera. They're also trying to centralize, we covered them centralizing their support functions for advisors and things like that. So very similar moves.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that like growth of these platforms isn't necessarily linear either. I mean, you talk about Osaic building out the RA channel. They hired Ed Swenson, formerly of Dynasty Financial Partners, to help build that out. Mm-hmm. And you know, he just left the company after about 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And then Cetera, I mean, they hired Jennifer Hanau from Mariner, and that was to build out this own dedicated RIA and branches channel.
Yeah.
And so I find it fascinating. I mean, LPL clearly is onto something here, and it seems like the rest of the BDs are not trying to play catch up, but they seem like they're trying to skate in a similar direction as well.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, it's hard to, it's hard to consolidate, to centralize when you see such a strong flow toward independence, or you know, so much interest in independence.
Excellent. So I've got two questions left for you, and these are both going to put you on the spot. The first one is, you know, what is kind of the next step in this story that you're looking to cover? So how do you want to move this forward? I mean, what are you looking at next now that the story is out?
I'm just wondering what other incentives are in play for advisors to go corporate. You know, is there something larger there that we haven't touched on? But you know, I'm in the broker dealer world at LPL, Osaic, elsewhere.
And then the last thing I wanted to ask you about is I heard recently that you achieved minor local celebrity status and appeared in a rival publication in the last couple of days. So before Alex gets mad at you for allegedly writing for somebody else, how'd you get in the local paper?
I appeared, well, appeared is a strong word. The back of my head was in the feature photo of a story in The City, which is a nonprofit, I believe, news outlet that covers mostly local politics, but they wrote about a bluegrass jam that I go to on Wednesday nights. So I was featured there a little bit.
I did say I'd recognize the back of that head anywhere.
Yeah.
And for the listeners, what instrument do you play?
Mandolin. Yeah, mostly mandolin. A little bit of guitar.
You're going to have to do a live Tiny Desk concert next episode. I'm calling it now.
Let's do it.
All right, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of This Week in Wealth.